Every few weeks on Drive, Father Chris Bedding emerges from the hills alongside Wurzel Montague, who vicars on the coast. Both are steeped in religious tradition. Mm. They each provide keen insights into the world of faith and life and meaning. Let's begin with the first services to be held at Notre Dame since that big fire. A couple of things I noticed about it. OH&S hard hats during the service. Is that appropriate?
That's very appropriate. I mean,
No, it shows a complete lack of faith in God.
They were wearing helmets inside.
If you don't believe God can protect you from the ceiling falling in while you're saying the Mass, then get out of the game.
Can I just point out that I worship weekly in a heritage listed building, which has only just been restored, and there was a genuine risk for many years of being hurt. And I have sat in a chair in the Mass and had the wall flake onto my head.
A flake? A flake is a kiss from Jesus.
Yeah, but imagine if it was bigger than a flake.
Well, look, are we all aware here of the story of the Mostar Dome, Mostar in Malta? So Malta was the most bombed place anywhere during World War II.
Yeah.
Like a Luftwaffe bomb fell through the dome of the cathedral during Mass during World War II, landed on the floor, did not explode.
Whoa.
A second bomb hit the exterior of the building near the doorway of the church, did not explode. The Maltese kept on celebrating that Mass with two unexploded bombs at their feet.
They don't knock around the Maltese.
No, so they weren't wearing hard hats.
Okay.
Wow.
So there's a difference of opinion as to whether the service should have gone ahead.
I think hard hats is very reasonable.
With hard hats or without hard hats. This is Lorna, who's been waiting very patiently. Hi, Lorna.
Hello. Well, yesterday was Trinity Sunday in the church, and I wondered if the holy heretics might be able to simply explain the Trinity to us listeners out there.
I think it's very straightforward, and thank Lorna for her question. It's like a shamrock.
Why is he laughing? Oh,
it's exactly the same as a shamrock. That's how I would explain it.
Wow, that's terrible. I actually preached a sermon yesterday morning saying that all across Christendom yesterday morning, because it was Trinity Sunday, there were some of the worst sermons ever heard from pulpits because, you know, the preachers of various stripes trying to explain the slippery and baffling doctrine of the Trinity, which is, you know, it's this divine mystery that we have some poetic language around, but trying to explain it in quasi-rational scientific terms.
Can you just not use phrases like quasi-rational in this segment?
Sorry.
Donna just wanted to know, why is it called Trinity Sunday? What's it all about?
Okay.
Three persons, one substance. So God is one being with three persons. I don't think it's that difficult.
And why was yesterday such a big day?
Oh, well, every year we have one day of the year dedicated to a doctrine rather than to an event, and it's always the Sunday after Pentecost, Trinity Sunday.
And today when the parishioners sit there with their mouths open, looking confused, while the preacher sweats and says, so it's like,
three.
But it's not like.
It's like how ice is kind of, and water and steam, but not.
But not. That's a heresy, but.
Yeah, like someone can be your mum and someone else's auntie and their sister all at the same time, but not. But
did that answer your question satisfactorily?
Absolutely not, but I feel much better now.
Thank you very much. What a fantastic response. UHF, this is a Drive program, The Holy Heretics. Father Chris and Wurzel come in every month. Now, this story's been around for a while, but I'm interested in your interpretation of it. The Pope has declared that the line in the Lord's Prayer, lead us not into temptation, be altered to become, do not let us fall into temptation. Can you tell me why that matters so much?
Well, we should first recognise that this is in the Italian Mass. Right, so in English, it's not changing yet, but I imagine it will. If old Popey has set the ball rolling in Italy, then it's going to start knocking on. It'll be changed in Mandarin. It'll be changed in Swahili.
Yep.
It'll be changed in Ukrainian.
Here's what we call
it. Changed in English.
When
the Pope starts a ball rolling, it doesn't stop until it hits a very large wall.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so in English, the weird thing in the Catholic Church, they still use the ye olde language. You know, who art in heaven? Hallowed be thy name. But in the Anglican and Uniting and most other churches, we use a modernized version. So, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, and so on. There was a lot of consternation a few years ago when the English Mass was retranslated into English and things changed, and there's a lot of grumpy people in the Catholic Church, English speaking.
Let me ask this question then.
Yeah.
What does it take to change the language of something like the Lord's Prayer? Is this something the Pope has thought about for a long time? And I know the understanding of the interpretation was that lead us not into temptation, rather suggest that God is leading us into temptation, and that is not what the Pope wanted.
It's a nuance. I mean, that's basically the nuance, not the meaning is changing. And he's trying to make the language reflect the kind of intent that's in the Latin. But there's committees and commissions. There's this thing called the ELLC, the English Language Liturgical Commission, which governs all English translations. Vast numbers of people are involved. The Pope's, he's jumped on the bad wagon at the end, I think.
Yeah.
He hasn't put in the hard yards.
Yeah.
He's just gone, seems like a good idea, roll it out.
Yeah, that's something we can do to look like we're kind of progressive and changing and moving with the times, and that really it's just a matter of,
How often is the Lord's Prayer refreshed for a modern audience?
Well, the last
time... Is that what they do? Is that the idea?
Oh, no. Well, the funny thing is, you remember Latin masses, right? I'm sure you've been to many of them, Jeff. There are Catholics, many Catholics alive today, who remember the Mass only in Latin, and then it started happening in the vernacular, so in English. And so they all had to learn the Lord's Prayer in English, and they learnt the Ye Olde language version. But in the Catholic world, English-speaking world, they still use the Ye Olde language. So it hasn't been refreshed since like the 60s for Catholics, but for Anglicans, 95 was the last time we gave it a bit of a tidy up.
My arms are folded in a slight defensive posture.
I can tell.
Which will show you that my question seems quite stupid. Who wrote the Lord's Prayer?
This is actually a good question. It appears in the Gospels.
Two of the Gospels. Yeah.
Two of the four Gospels. And two slightly different versions. And as the Gospels have it written, it came from Jesus.
Yeah. And there are two versions, one in Matthew, one in Luke, each slightly different. And neither of them has, "For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever, and amen." That's an addition.
Yeah, that's fan fiction.
Yeah. And remember that Jesus spoke Aramaic. The Aramaic was translated into Greek. The Greek's translated into Latin. Then the Latin is translated into English. So there's been a bit of translating going on just to get to where we are, and so the nuances have changed as the English as all languages have changed.
Is it the most important prayer?
Yes.
Is it like the national anthem of prayers?
Oh, look, I would argue that the Lord's Prayer is such a good prayer. It can be said by anyone, like any faith can say it, because it's so general, so gloriously general and universal that it's usable in just about any circumstance.
So rather beautifully written for the message being conveyed.
It's a work of genius.
Yeah, I think enough work's not being done to sort of trace back to the original sort of meanings, like the original. Like there's one of the versions translates better to something like "Forgive us our debts, as we forgive those indebted to us." I mean, when you look at the sort of that's economics, that's real world stuff.
Same with bread.
Bread.
Oh, give us this day our daily bread. We don't understand like the relevance of bread in kind of peasant.
Intolerant.
Well, exactly. But if you're a peasant, if you're genuinely poor, bread has a significant role in your life, and we just rattle it off very often
without piously, like it's a spiritual thing.
Absolutely, but even hallowed be your name is a political.
Can you tell me what that means? Because I've been saying it. I was saying it about grade 1, 2, or 3 at my state school. I'm sure that we said the Lord's Prayer every day.
Likely. I hope so.
And then said, "Hallowed be,
Harold be thy name." That's
Harold
the old gag.
Be the name.
Well, hallowed just means honoured, but the name of the emperor was what was really honoured in the ancient Roman world. And so to say the name of this murdered Galilean peasant should be honoured is a whole different ball game.